class. We're on Gimel Amid Beis, about in the middle of the page. We're going to be starting with the words, first word on the line, Ve Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel. If you're looking in the regular Gemara, I'd say it's about 20 lines from the top. It's before the middle set of wide lines. In your art scroll, probably 3B2.
Yeah, right at the top.
Right at the top? Yeah. Okay, if you got a regular Gemara, it's the first word on the line. Ve Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel. Yeah. Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel made the first statement right after the Mishnah about if you lend the friend money over 10 years, if Shemitah knocks it off or not. Two different versions. Does it knock it off? Does it not knock it off? Not related back to the Mishnah. So now Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel is going to make another statement. And while we're on the topic of Shemitah, we'll continue on the topic of Shemitah for a while. We've sort of drifted away from Eidim Zomimim. And we are going to all the way to the next Mishnah, stay away from Eidim Zomimim. Till the next Mishnah, we'll come back to Eidim Zomimim. So we're going to go from topic to topic here today. Okay, we're all starting together?
Yep.
Ve Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Shmuel. Ha'imer l'chavero. If a person says to a friend, I'm going to lend you money, al menas shelo tashmeteni shvis, on the condition that Shemitah will not push me off. That's what he says. So, guess what the law is? Shvis mishametes. Shemitah knocks him off.
Now, can't contract out of Shemitah.
The guy does not have to pay the debt. The guy knew Shemitah was coming. He says, I know Shemitah's coming, but I'm making up with you separate thing. I'm saying, you know what? I'm only going to lend you if you agree that Shemitah is not going to interfere and I can just take.
No,
guy says, okay, shake on it, fine. Guy comes in with Shemitah, guys, ha ha, it's Shemitah.
What kind of a deal is that?
Yeah. Okay, that's what it says. So now let us see what's going on over here. So Lema, let's say, what do we see from this statement? Remember, Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel. Kesover Shmuel, masna alma shekasuv batorahu. The guy has made a masna, made a condition on that which is written in the Torah. V'chol ha-masna alma shekasuv batorah, and anyone who makes a condition on that which is written in the Torah, to Nahu Batel, the condition is nullified. So now let's explain this statement over, because it has to be understood on a deeper level. Now, in a minute, they're going to bring a machlokas about this. So the question is, how can you have a machlokas about this? This is a rule. In other words, there is a rule. If you make a condition upon which is written in the Torah, then your condition is not true.
You contrary can't, to what's written.
You can't make any conditions contrary to the Torah. Now, nobody argues on that rule. However, there is an argument in one area of this, and that is regarding money. Whereas if you're going to make a condition, that's a condition that you don't wear tzitzis. Well, you can't make kids that, because God says you got to wear tzitzis every day, and it's not your business to mishrain in God's Torah.
Contradiction.
Can't change that. But when we're dealing with money areas, we can say, well, listen, it's a money issue. Okay, I agree the Torah says Shemitah knocks it off, but you know what? If we both agree that Shemitah shouldn't knock it off, then it's only a monetary issue between me and you. And in other words, a monetary issue, it's personal between me and you, so then maybe that's where there's room for machlokas. If it's between you and God, okay, you can't make conditions, you know, when God says you can't. Now, the whole point of Shemitah is to safeguard the borrower. Or to equalize, or whatever. Guy said, listen, I know the Shemitah thing, but I'm telling you right now, I ain't lending you if I got Shemitah problems here. Okay? So you know what? Are you at least willing to forgo this thing in terms of money issues? So there's a machlokes if you can make a condition in this one detail of what's written in the Torah. So when it regards to money. So it would appear that Shmuel would say that the reason Shemitah knocks him off, because even in this area, he would say that's considered making condition against what's written in the Torah, and therefore the condition would be nullified. That's what we would think that Shmuel has said. Mm-hmm. But there's a problem, because we're going to have a statement of Shmuel that seems to contradict it. V'ha'itmar, but we learned somewhere else, ha'imer lechavero. If a guy makes a deal with another fellow, and this is a little bit different, he says, I'm selling you a 2008 Sienna, olai ono, and I'm making this deal on the condition that you will have no complaints that I will have cheated you later on. There is a halacha that if a person really cheats a guy in a deal, there's an idea called ono. Let's say if you overcharge him ridiculously too much, the guy can go to court and say, this guy robbed me blind. I don't want to get into how much and this and that, but that's called ono. And that's a biblical thing. You can't overcharge people. You go to the store and the guy says, what's the cost? You buy it, you go home. You say, your wife says, how can you pay so much money for it? That's what he charged. I think it's ono. Go to the bezin. He says, yeah, I paid $105,000 for a 2008 Sienna.
No such thing as cabin empty.
They said, you know, I think you paid a little too much. Let's call the guy in there, right? So there is such a concept. So the guy says, I'll tell you, I'll sell you this Sienna, it's a great deal, but I'm telling you right now, I'm giving you for a great steal. It's $105,000. But I'm making this deal on one condition. On one condition that there's no ono going to apply to this sale. Okay? So now, what's the halacha? Well, there's a machlokes. Now again, ono means cheating, to be considered
price
what? Fraud? Price fraud?
Fraud?
Okay, price fraud. Price fraud. He said there's no laws of price fraud here. Now again, that is a Torah concept. But again, it's only regarding money. So now, well, let's see what happens over. So Rav Omar, Rav says, yesh lo olav ono. There is price fraud here, and you can nullify the deal. Shmuel Omar ain't lo olav ono. Shmuel says, we do not invoke the price fraud. And the deal stands. So now, what is that? That's a contradiction in Shmuel. Because the first statement we started tonight off with was Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel said, if the guy says, I'm going to lend you on the money, on the condition that Shemitah will not nullify the sale, the loan, we say, too bad, nullifies. Shemitah nullifies. You can't make a condition on what's written in the Torah, even in monetary issues. And now in a case where the guy sells it to him, and he says, I don't want to have any ono, Shmuel says, there is no ono, the deal stands, so it comes out, you could make a condition against what was written in
different
the Torah.
Law, though. One has Shemitah, one
but they're both monetary. It's the same biblical restrictions involved, and they're being, the question is, are they being waived or not? In the first instance, Shmuel says it's not waived, and the deal does not stand. Right, and you don't have to pay back the money. And the second one, it's also a biblical restriction. You can't cheat people in business. Same Torah. But he's saying in monetary issues, you can say that the deal stands. So it's a contradiction. So the answer is, ha'itmar Allah. So we learned on this the following. Amar Rav Anan said, Lididi, to me personally, Mefar Shalei Minei Dishmol. Shmuel explained his statement. In this last machlokas, Shmuel clarified to me what he meant when he said it. And now when I'm going to give the clarification, we're going to find there's no contradiction between the words that he said. Now listen carefully, because there's going to be two statements that sound very similar, but there's a subtle difference, and that's going to make all the difference in the world. So Shmuel said, let me clarify to you what I meant, and what I was speaking about, and what I wasn't speaking about. If the guy says, Al menas she'ein l'cho olai ono, I'm speaking where I'm making the following condition. Ein l'cho olai. You won't come to me with a problem of ono. It's very specific. You won't come to me with a problem of ono. So that's when I said, ein lo olav ono. Then there is ono. That's what I said. But now here's a very similar statement that I wasn't talking about. But what about Amenash She'ein Bo Ono? I'm doing to you on the condition that there is no Ono in this deal. I'm telling you that there's no cheating going on in this deal.
It's a representation then.
Right? He's not saying there is no laws of Ono going on here.
I'm not cheating you.
I'm selling you on the condition that there is no Ono over here. Okay? Then he didn't really nullify the laws of Ono. So in that case, Hare Yesh Bo Ono, there is Ono. So what's he trying to show? He's trying to say, you know, there could be two kinds of statements made. One is a statement that we will say the Ono doesn't stand, because he's keeping it between him and the guy, Mamish. The other one is more of a global statement, or of truth, let's say, is I'm making this deal on the condition that there's just no ona here. I'm telling you, there's no ona over here. That's how Rashi learns it. And we'll just leave it with Rashi. So that's a subtle difference. So how'll that help us? Well, if that's what he said regarding that discussion, so let's go back to what he said about by Shemitah.
So on that second clause,
he would agree there is ona.
Right.
So now let's go back to the Shemitah one, and maybe we can also finagle the same thing and come up with two similar statements, but are still a little different. So Hachinami, let's say the same thing upstairs. If you say Almenas Shelo Tishmateni Bishvis, I'm going to lend this to you on the condition that you will not invoke that the Shemitah will knock me off between me and you personally. Ain Shvis Misham Tasso. Then I would even agree that the Shemitah does knock it off. But that's not what I said over there. Over there said Almenas Shelo Tishmateni Shvis on the condition that Shemitah doesn't work. That's different. It's the first one saying, I'm going on, you're saying you won't invoke the Shemitah on me.
Right.
That's when the deal will stand. But if I say that I make a decision that Shemitah will not be bearing over here, Shemitah Misham Tenos, Shemitah can do that. You know why? Because it's not your Shemitah to say that it gets invoked or not. If you want to say, I make this thing that the laws of Shemitah don't apply. Well, you know, the laws of Shemitah apply. But if I say, I make it, and you won't enforce the Shemitah on it, then he's saying, laws of Shemitah apply. But to me, you don't want to make that happen. Yeah. That's similar to the case before, where he says, if you won't claim any ona on me, if you won't claim any ona. So that's the difference. If it's between me and you, and we keep it between me and you, then Shmuel is saying, then you don't have to follow the Torah rules. So although in the first statement, Rabbi Yehuda Mer Shmuel says, the guy says that the Shemitah won't knock it off, he's saying in general the Shemitah won't knock it off. Then the Shemitah knocks it off. The statement he said by Ono, he says, between me and you, there shouldn't be any Ono. Then okay, there's no Ono between you, me and you. And if he would have said back by the Shemitah, between me and you there isn't any Shemitah, then there is a Shemitah. The point being, you can't take the Torah law and throw the law out the window. But we could say the law's there.
Just massage it.
But me and you, you know, you're going to be marking me on that law.
The one and only exception to that.
Right. Yeah.
So if this is possible, why did they have to come up with pros bowls and having the based in?
Because we got a machlokas here. even though Shmuel says that, Rav argues with him. There's a machlokas here, right? Even by Ona, right? We had the machlokas. Rav says there is Ona. Shmuel said not.
Rav would say the same thing about Shmuel.
And guess what? We paskin like Rav.
There's the answer.
We paskin like Rav. There's no contradiction in Shmuel. The only thing is, we don't hold like Shmuel. So since you're right, according to Shmuel, he wouldn't need a pruz ball, but we don't hold like Shmuel at the end of the day. Since we don't hold like Shmuel, we need the pruz ball. And that's better because you're not getting into a machlokas now.
Right.
Because Pruzbal is not good with the machlokas. The Bezdin is collecting it. We're not nullifying the mitzvah at all. So therefore, that's why Pruzbal
won't
help.
But according to Shmuel then, this isn't a unique case. Wouldn't any monetary laws that come into place...
According to him, if you want this...
Any monetary laws, you could say, you know what?
Between me and you, according to Shmuel, that's true. But it would appear that Rav doesn't hold like that. Rav doesn't know like that. And we don't paskin like that. We don't paskin like Shmuel. So you can't make those off the, you know, silent deals. Can't do that.
It still off seems, balance sheet according to Rav, it still seems, no, sorry, Shmuel, that you are changing the Torah law.
No, the Torah law stands. Torah stands for everybody in the world.
But between
us two, I want you to be moichel me on that. That you're not going to enforce it on me. The law stands. It's a law for everybody else in the world. But you're not going to enforce it. So that's the machlokas. That's the machlokas. Can two consenting adults, you know, and when it comes to monetary issues, remember the whole point is that Torah is trying to protect buyers. It's trying to protect the buyers. That's the point of the law. So I'm saying, okay, I'm moichel on the protection.
That's probably why Rob doesn't like it.
You can't make vows on laws that have nothing to do with the buyer and seller. Right, I'm making a deal with you that you know you will work for me on Shabbos. On the condition you work for me on Shabbos, yeah, you can't make it a Shabbos. It's not your Shabbos to deal with. But listen, the whole point was to make it easy for you. I ain't going to lend it to you unless you know don't hold that against me. If you don't hold the intent of the law against me, Rav says, I won't lend you. So the guy says, well, I'd rather you lend me the money than I have nothing. So that's the machlokas. Can you do that or not? Because you're not violating the spirit of the law. So can you do it? So that's the machlokas. At the end of the day, we don't hold like him. And then you can't do it. But at least we're consistent with Shmuel's statements. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a basic question. You've got that.
Okay, fine.
But how do we know who we're holding by? Is it just by tradition?
No, I'm cheating. Because in the regular Shas Gemara, they put a little letter next to the opinion that's the winner. Because it gives you a source.
The hay.
Yeah, that's right. You said the dalet before and the hay before. Yeah. Right? So that's a little hint. It sources you to the Rambam or the Shulchan Aruch, and that usually means that's what they're holding. That's a little cheat way, right? If we would have time, we'd look up the Rambam, we'd go through the Shulchan Aruch, and you'd find out that's the law. Okay, continuing on. We're now on...
When were those added, those...
You know, later. It's not later, part of the Talmud per se. It's the editors who compiled new editions of the Talmud. You have to remember, the original Talmud only had Gemara. Right? The original one. Then they added Rashi. These are publishers. Remember, the publishers have a lot of power. It's all in the publisher's hand. Right? Initially, there was just the Gemara. So people by hand wrote. Can you imagine a guy wrote 60 volumes of the Gemara, right? That was a very precious thing to have. Okay, now they finally get the printing presses. Now the print, but by the time that the printing presses, what year did the printing presses come into? 1615. Okay, by then you had Rashi's commentary, you had Tosfos, you had the Rambam, you had this. It depended what the printer's discretion was. The printers were not necessarily scholars; they were businessmen. That's also true. So the point being, you know, the fact. Okay, everyone understands you have to have Rashi because Rashi is the bread and butter commentary. But there were some publishers, for example, put Rashi on one side and put the Rambam on the other side. You know, the fact you put Tosfos, I mean, Chas v'Shalom, I'm not criticizing, but Tosfos is one of many medieval scholars. We could have chosen to pick the Rajba, the Ritva, someone else that may have even served us better.
There's publications with them.
Right?
So
that was like one age generation. Then a guy figures, you know, as you go further along, then the next person says, well, you know, I think I'm going to add the commentary of the Rabbeinu Chananel at the bottom over here. Then the guy says, you know what? It would be really nice if people knew how to reference the halachas. They're learning the Gemara. Where are they going to find the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam? So this guy came along and says, you know, whatever relates to halacha, the Rambam, I'll put a little letter there. So the publisher put that in. So he usually puts the letter by the one that we hold like.
Right.
So that's not the Talmud per se. The Talmud Ravina Ravashi didn't put any of that stuff in. All you got was the basic stuff in the middle. Okay.
That's that little tiny letter that's above. That's
yeah, the dalet or the hay.
Even the aleph there, like on the top there, there's an aleph with the star and then the base.
Okay,
like, right
there's all aleph. Kinds of things. Okay, we'll spend another session explaining to you all the little things. It's all referencing something.
Two alephs.
No, there's one aleph.
No, there's only one.
An aleph and a star. Henry, that's a star.
Yeah.
No, here, this
that's a Howard.
This is a star?
Oh, you have a different one than I have.
Yeah, I got an aleph.
I have a star instead of an aleph.
Yeah, me too.
So that's referencing another Gemara. A lot of times there'll be stars or letters that will reference another Gemara.
Oh.
All right, don't worry about that. It's
in
a little bit beyond where we're at. But just to end Ken's question, that's how I know how to cheat on the page. Okay? Let's continue. Let's continue.
Awesome.
Third wide line. Tana. Okay, we learned the following. This is a Tosefta. So that has the same time of the Tanoim. It says like this. Here's a very fascinating halacha. And I mentioned this before, now this is the source of it. Hamalva es chavero stam. If a person lends someone money, stam. Stam means without any qualifications. He didn't say how long the lending was. Guy said, lend me $1,000 here, here's $1,000. Didn't say anything about the time frame of paying back. A few weeks passed, the guy's went, oh, I wonder when he's going to pay me back. Guy said, maybe he's going to pay me back. He said, well, you never said when I have to pay you back. I was planning on maybe 5, 6, 7 years, maybe till Shemitah, you know? And I said, no, that doesn't make sense. So now we have to have some rules on the books that tell us. I mean, usually you would say how long it is, and they didn't say. So there's got to be a law telling us, if you didn't say, what is the term, right? So Gemara says, if you lend without any specific terms, Eina Rashoy Litovo Pachos Milamid Yom. You're not allowed to claim from the guy less than 30 days. In other words, a general lending, the assumption is it's 30 days and not more. That's a statement of the Tosefta without any clarification. It can't be less than 30 days. You can't go to him before 30 days are up. The assumption is it's a 30-day loan at least. And now at 30 days, and 30 days, not at least, 30 days. So now 30 days, 30 days is up, pay me the money. Well, we didn't say, it's a stam loan. Stam loan's 30 days. Now, that's a statement. That's net 30, right?
30, 60, 90.
Right? I don't know. What if you don't say anything? If you make a deal, you don't say anything. Take the guy to court. Believe me, you're not taking him within 30 days. But it was like a net 30. That's a stam is a net 30. You lend the guy, it's a net 30.
Is it a coincidence that that case we dealt with before with the 10 years, they claimed 30 days?
Yeah, I mean, that would, you know, well, it's just using it as an extreme. It didn't have to be 30. It's an extreme.
But it's almost like it was silent, so we said 30 days.
I don't know if it has to be. Anyway, that is the Tosefta without any explanation. Now, the Amoraim are going to now debate exactly what this Mishnah means. Now, Sova Rabba Bar Chana, Rabba, the son of Chana, Kamederav, he felt to say in front of Rav, Lamemer to say the following. Rabba Bar Bar Chana wanted to explain the Tosefta as follows. Hani Mili, when do we say that Stam alone is 30 days? B'milva b'shtar. If the guy made a shtar, made a document, a IOU, whatever, promissory note, and they wrote out a promissory note, and the promissory note didn't say the term. I, Shmerel, a lending barrel $1,000. And he doesn't, today, April 27th, whatever.
To be paid back.
Obviously to be paid back. But he doesn't say how long the term is. So when do we say that a stam loan is 30 days? When you wrote a shtar. Why? To lo ovid inish de torach, a person isn't going to go through the trouble because of shtar to write a document. But seer mital sinyomen for a loan that's going to be less than 30 days. In other words, if you're going to lend them for only a week, what do you write a shtar for? Maybe someone's going to forget, right? But if it's such a short period of time, what are you bothering to write a shtar? It's a big hassle to go get a piece of parchment and get some ink and get some witnesses to sign. It's a big deal. So you know what? If it's a short loan, the guy wouldn't go through the trouble. The fact that the guy is going through the trouble, by definition, we understand it is going to be for leaser days. So when the Tosefta said Stam alone is 30 days, says Rabba Bar Bar Chana, it only applies if you wrote out a document. Aval, milval, pet. What if it's only a verbal loan? Lo. Then it could even be less than 30 days. The collection should be less than 30 days. That was his statement. That's what Rabba Bar Chana said in front of Rav. Now Rav heard that, and he responded to him. Omar le Rav, Rav says, Hochi Omar Chavivi. This is what my beloved said. Who is his beloved? It was his uncle, Rabbi Chia. Okay, Rabbi Chia was the brother of Rav's father. So Rav is responding, says so. So Rabba Bar Bar Chana, you said a statement. I'm going to tell you what my uncle said. And I guess he agrees with it. He says, doesn't matter if the guy lends with a document, doesn't matter if he lends verbally, it's the same thing, it's 30 days. Is it 30 days only when a shtar is written? Or even if a shtar, or even if it's verbalized, is it going to be 30 days? Okay. Now, Tanya Nami Hochi, and we have a brisa that supports this last point. It says clearly, now the Tosefta wasn't clear, that's where the debate was, but a brisa says clearly, Hamavas Chaveru Stam, if a person lends a guy without any specific class number 7, and we're on page Daf Gimel Amid Beis, and we are 4 lines from the bottom of the page. In your art scroll, it'll be 3B and the last of the 3 Bs. If it's 3B3, 3B4, whatever the last one is.
3B.
Okay. And it's another statement, remember, of Ve'omer Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Remember, we're combining all the statements of Rabbi Yehuda Marav upon which people had questions on. This topic is going to carry us right to the Mishnah.
Actually,
three on Dalet Amud Aleph.
Three before.
It says nothing to do with Edim Zomimim. But that'll be the end of it. Then we go right back into Edim Zomimim. All right? So I don't know if we're going to make it to the Mishnah today. That would be nice, because then we could just kind of, you know, keep it in one session. But
let's do it. Do it.
But it's got to concentrate. We are now going into the world of mikvah. Think mikvah now. Okay?
Sink or swim.
Think mikvah. Okay? Now, we know that a mikvah has to have a measurement of 40 sa'a. Doesn't matter what a saw is right now. Doesn't matter how many gallons it is, but it has to be 40 saw. Now, another thing you have to realize, that once it's 40 saw, by and large, then it's okay if you... let me say another thing. The 40 saw of water have to be rainwater, and water that was not drawn by a utensil. Water that's drawn by your utensil is called mayim she'uvin, drawn water. So you just can't turn on the sink and toss water into a mikveh and start the mikveh. Even better, you can't even take rainwater that was collected in a pan and carry the pan and dump it into the mikveh. It's got to be, so how you do it, we're not going to get into that now, we're not running mikvehs, but it's got to be pure rainwater. Once you've got the 40 saw, by and large, you may now add drawn water. And that's how we use the mikvahs today. The mikvah you go into, the one you go into, isn't the real original mikvah. The original mikvah is not the one you see. That's called the bor. And that's usually behind a locked door. Yeah. And that's the original mikvah of the rainwater. Then they make a little opening. And then it connects to another area that they fill up with water. And that connects and makes everything else good. What we are going to be focusing now for the night is what happens if you have a little bit less than 40 saw, and you're short a few, a little percentage, and now you're going to add water that was drawn water to it. Will it work? Will it not work? Okay, that's the issue we're going to be talking about the whole night now. We're going to see certain waters might work, certain might not work. You don't have the 40 saw of proper rainwater by itself. We're missing a few quarts, as it were. And now we got to add some. Now, on a simple level, for sure, if you just, let's say it's missing 3 quarts of water, and now you take 3 buckets of water, and just toss it in, for sure the whole mikvah's done. No good. Right? Now we're going to talk about different types of liquids where different liquids are not going to necessarily be a negative to it, and they could be combined for the 40 saw. That's the whole discussion for tonight.
Does this have any relevance to the tangent? Does it come from?
No. It's just another statement of Rav Yehuda Amarav. Since we're having statements of Yehuda Amarav, so we're adding a few more statements that he made. We're collecting them all in this place. So just think mikveh today. All right? And maybe it'll inspire everybody to want to go to the mikveh this Friday. Okay, learning the halacha, you might be inspired. You know, I had some very good news. I met when I was in the Pesach Hotel this year, so I talked a lot about Shabbos.
Really?
Wonder why, right? And what you should do for Erev Shabbos, and the whole, what you guys had to go through for 4 months, I did it in,
just,
in
just
one week over
thing,
there.
Yes.
So anyways, I met a lady at Sobeys, she's from Thornhill Grada, and they were at the Pesach Hotel for Thornhill. They go to the Bayit. And she said, "All right, Michal, I just want you to know that the first house I come back, I had the whole house ready by Chatzos. And my husband's gone to the Chabad Mikvah for the last 3 Shabboses, Erev Shabboses in a row." So it just shows you that somebody listens. Okay, but Baruch Hashem. So anyway, so maybe by learning the Hilchos of Mikvah, we'll be inspired to want to go to the Mikvah. Okay. V'am are 4 lines from the bottom. V'am Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Shlosha login mayim. Okay, now log is a measurement as well. I even wrote it down, but it's not going to really help. Where did I write it? Yes, a log is 24 ounces. Okay, so if you have 24, each log is 24 ounces. So if you have 3 logim or lugim of water, Now, that is drawn water. Okay, now we just have to add in. You have a mikveh that's 40 missing this three log. Uh-huh. It needs three more lugim to make it up to 40.
72 ounces.
Okay, so now you've got three lugim and it's water. And this is not good water. This is the drawn water. So that's bad news. But shenofa letochan kortuv shel yayin. That in this three log, another measurement, a kortov. A kortov is 1/4 ounce. Okay? It means a small amount.
Yeah.
A small amount, but what of wine? Now, it must be very powerful, strong wine. Red wine. So,
a quarter ounce.
So, whatever. And a quarter ounce of wine. It doesn't have to be a quarter ounce. The point is trying to say, you have a significant amount of water and a little bit of wine, but guess what happens when you mix the water and the wine together? Umarehen kemare yayin. But it looks like wine.
That's less than a 60th, isn't it?
Yes, but I guess it's very, very strong color. Red wine, you know, to clear water, yeah, is like able to make it look like food coloring. Yeah. Remember, the wine in those days was very strong wine and had to be diluted, but this is really that. But it's still, it looks like wine. Okay, now, v'nafu l'mikvah. Now that falls into a mikvah that is three log short of the 40. So the halacha is, he says, lo pasluhu. It does not make it puzzle. Why? Because we go after what the liquid looks like. The liquid looks like wine, and the halacha is, if let's say I had a mikveh that was just short of 40 saw, and I put three log of wine in, wine does not make the mikveh puzzle.
Does it make it kosher? Okay.
It can be add on and make it kosher.
So it would make it to 40 and...
It would make it to 40 and make it kosher. And that's...
You're short of 40. It would be 37?
No, three lugim short.
Well, lugim, it could be you have... I don't look up exactly the 40 saw. But you're missing three log to make it 40 saw. Okay? So now, if you would put three lugim of wine right into the mikveh is now kosher. Okay? Now... The fact that we have, it's really three logim of water, but that little bit of wine changes the color and it looks mamish like wine. Okay? So that's what we're saying. We go after, so Rabbi Yehuda Mara's position is we go after what does it look like. And wine does not make a mikveh puzzle, only a puzzle with drawn water. Okay.
It's treated as if it were rainwater for the purpose of making it.
Yeah. Fine. So that's
it. Water from a well, though, would have made it possible?
Yes.
Yeah.
Rabbinically. Mayim Shuvim, rabbinically, it's not good. So that's his statement. So, okay. So, Maskiv la Rav Kahana, and Rav Kahana asked him a question. Well, why does that make it kosher? How is it different than another law in a Mishnah that seems to be not kosher? V'chima bein zeh l'meit seva. How is this different than colored water? It's none that we learn in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Meit Seva, colored water, postliness, a mikvah, bishloshes login. If you have three log of colored water, that's drawn water, it makes the mikvah possible. And obviously, it's not clear looking water. And so, what's interesting, colored water and wine?
Wine.
You're saying wine looking water is kosher. And colored-looking water is not kosher. It would seem to be the same thing. So what's the difference? And you can't argue on a Mishnah.
Especially when he said it's the color
that
makes it
right.
Like wine.
So Amarle Rava now defends Rabbi Yehuda Marav's position. He says, Hasam over there, the fact we know it's colored water, so it's Maya Ditsiva Mikri. It's called water that is colored. Okay? Over here, Hocha, though, we look at it and we call it Chamra Meziga Mikri. We call it diluted wine. In other words, when you're looking at something that's red, I guess the colored water is not colored red. It's got a different color. But anyway, when you mix wine with water, we call it wine that's diluted, because wine is something that gets diluted anyway. So it has a status of wine that's diluted, as opposed to water that just has a coloring to it. It's called colored water and still has the status of water. So I guess in those days, if you just colored water, it was remained the status of water. But if you put wine into it, then it elevates it, I guess because of the content of the wine, even if it's a small amount. And